wedding businesses. Listen up. Black Bear Diner is now offering catering for events, meetings, and gatherings. Fuel your team with our delicious homestyle meals that everyone will love. Ready to make your next event a hit? Visit blackbeardiner.com for more information and place your order. Black Bear Diner, your go-to for great food and good times.
Black Bear Diner.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Rogers and Hammerstein really did put it all together, just integrated everything into one seamless piece. And that became the template for musicals written ever since. They all bore the imprint of Oklahoma.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was John Steele Gordon, author, historian, and also nephew of Oscar Hammerstein. We talk later on in today's program about Rodgers and Hammerstein and the American musical. First, we're joined by Dr. Wilfred McClay. He is Victor Davis Hanson Chair in Classical History and Western Civilization here at Hillsdale College. Dr. McClay, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Talking today about a report you authored for the American Enterprise Institute. You can find it at aei.org, Restoring Civics in Higher Education. We sometimes spend time talking about K-12, but this is, well, higher education. What's the connection between an educated citizenry and self-government?
Well, I just have to add the supposedly higher. Yeah. I actually think, just for what it's worth, that this kind of education on the particularly secondary school level, primary and secondary levels, is probably more important, more formative than higher education. But yes, I think it's important on the level of higher education, too. And as your question, the connection between civic education and self-government, you can't have a people that are capable of governing themselves if they don't know anything about the rules of the game or have any kind of commitment to the polity such that they would forego their individual ambitions, pleasures, whatever, for the sake of the whole. That is, there has to be something larger that they understand that commands their loyalty, and commands it rationally, not coercively. So that's one of the many reasons why we need a patriotic education, a civic education, to foster the sort of self-rule that is at the core of what we are as a republic, as a democratic republic.
Should we encourage patriotism in our colleges and universities? And is there a line somewhere that we should not be crossing into something that someone would call jingoism or outright propaganda?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, in the addendum to your question, I think we should encourage patriotism, but we shouldn't presume to propagandize for it. We shouldn't presume to coercively demand it of people. It's really, it's very similar, in fact, to the whole notion that we should teach love, that love, you know, this is a sort of Sunday school lesson of the first order, but how do you teach love? How do you command people to love one another, as we're commanded to do in the Bible. And how can that be a command if it is, if love is something that has to be freely given? And patriotism is the same way. There's a limit to what you can do to command patriotism or demand patriotism. But I think what you want to do is not undermine it, not set as your goal to undermine it, and to treat all sentiment that's directed towards the admiration and good and gratitude to our country as jingoism or as chauvinism or particularism of a bad sort. We don't criticize parents, at least I don't. I don't think you do, for loving their children more than other children, and that's not a sin. It's a sin not to take on the responsibility of loving that which is yours, which has been given to you for your care and stewardship, more than those individuals that have not been given to you in that way. And I think it's the same kind of thing. We need to be educated into it. It's not something that comes naturally. And by the way, even the love of our own, we have to learn. Just because we love our children doesn't mean that they get to break the rules, mm-hmm. and that we get to break the rules on their behalf, and that so in some way even that has to be tempered by the self-knowledge of being a self-ruling good parent. So they're very analogous in a lot of ways.
Is patriotism a virtue? Do we enrich ourselves and not just our country by being patriotic?
That all depends. The answer to that depends on, of course, how one defines virtue. And I tend to be influenced by the sort of classical understanding that virtue is a human excellence, but it's one that doesn't come to us automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think an unreflective love of country. Just kind of a visceral, yeah, to country is a passion, and it's not necessarily a good passion or a bad one, but it needs to be, like all passions, regulated. It needs to be rationally controlled, mm-hmm. and in a way that conduces to the good of the individual and of the whole, because if this is, loyalty, for example, is an interesting word in this way. I would balk at saying loyalty is a virtue, because you can be loyal to very bad things. You know, the mafia is, we are told, held together by loyalty. I don't want to get off the track and start talking about The Godfather, but there's all kinds of lessons in The Godfather about loyalty and how loyalty is supreme even over love of country in that demimonde. We're not for that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also not for the love of country superseding everything else. It has to be an informed patriotism. So that's, I think, the goal. And let me say this about higher education. I think one of the things I am very involved in now, because I wrote a textbook really for high school students and got involved in the whole K-12 world, I don't think it's the role of K-12 education to emphasize self-criticism. I don't mean that we treat our country as if it's Simon Pure and it's mm-hmm. Without fault. I think higher education, on the other hand, is a place where you are allowed, even expected, to question your received knowledge. And what we really believe, that's why we believe in liberal education here at Hillsdale College and others, a few others scattered around the land do too, that to be liberal means not to adhere to an ideology, it's to be free. We free people to question that which they have accepted just unthinkingly, they're free to reconsider. Is this really right? Is this really good? What about what Nietzsche says? What about what Thrasymachus says? What about this? What about that? And question our religious commitments too. We don't major in that.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to understand the deep, deep sources of those commitments. But that's where I think it is part of the curriculum to be open to questioning, to say, hey, the Spanish-American War, was that really such a good thing? Was that really motivated by jingoism?
Mm-hmm.
What about imperialism of the British Empire? And so on and so forth. This is the time to really, really bore in on those kinds of questions.
Dr. Bill McClay with us. We talk more next about restoring civics in higher education. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Extremist policies are running California into the ground. But there is hope, because of leaders like the North States Assemblyman James Gallagher. James Gallagher is fighting for us to protect our way of life from the Sacramento politicians who want to take away our parental rights and our God-given freedoms. And he has the record to prove it. James took on Gavin Newsom over the state's abuse of power during the COVID-19 pandemic and won, protecting our local small businesses and our schools. And now, James Gallagher is fighting Gavin Newsom to bring accountability for criminals and cut our gas prices. That's why James is pushing for reforms like Prop 36 that'll make our communities safer, keep criminals behind bars, and reduce homelessness. And James will work to cut inflation and taxes, which make our groceries, our energy, and our cost of living higher. The North States Assemblyman, conservative fighter, James Gallagher.
Paid for by Gallagher for Assembly 2024.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearm Destruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community. I want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Jazz Big Band Ensemble and Jazz Combo will be holding their fall concert on November 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Shasta College Theater. The performance will be directed by Zach Gifford. $7 general admission, $5 seniors and students, $10 at the door. For more information, please visit shastacollege.edu/arts-events or call the theater box office at 530-242-7573.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is Carl Butt. Join me Thursday as we welcome Mike Littow, candidate for Reading City Council. Let's find out what Mike wants to accomplish if he's elected Also joining us will be the Veterans Home of Reading with the latest on what's happening out there. All of this Thursday right here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Dr. Bill McClay from Hillsdale's History Department about a report he recently authored for the American Enterprise Institute on restoring civics in higher education. Dr. McClay,
if we receive this patriotic education, what does that mean that we then owe to our country?
Well, the country is... It's again, I recur to the family analogy, and that only takes you so far. Country is not a family. Big difference. But there are similarities that are worth considering, that just as we honor our father and mother, and it's a commandment in the Hebrew Bible, but it's also acknowledgement of the source of our being and of those who cared for us, however imperfectly, from the time that we were helpless and dependent infants into an adulthood in which we're capable of being autonomous beings. It's a mistake, and it's a very common modern mistake, to think that we fundamentally are those autonomous beings. No. No, it's a long time coming to be able to be think as a free person. And often the best outcome is to come freely back to the things we were taught when we were young. But our country is in some ways similar to our parents in that it is a source of our being. It is a source of many things that we take for granted, peace, prosperity, in the case of this country. Things to be very grateful for. And the more that we know about the rest of the world, the more that we know about the rest of history, should make us all the more grateful for the country we have and the circumstances we have and we've been blessed with. So, I think a patriotic education ought to include that kind of reverence for the country. Mm-hmm. And a sense that when you cross the country, when you say nasty things, as you hear from time to time, about the country, kind of utterly dismissive things, these are people who are not really acknowledging where they came from, literally. They treat themselves as if they sprung, you know, like Athena out of the head of Zeus, although even Zeus's head was necessary for that to happen. You know, we didn't spring out into the world fully developed. All of these things, the language we speak, the music we listen to, all sorts of customary things that are such a part of ourselves, come from the culture, come from the society, come from the polity of which we're a part.
You wrote in this essay at AEI.org, this report, about some encouraging reactions to the crisis of civic ignorance. I think some in North Carolina, Utah. What are you seeing out there?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of good things going on. Be ye not dismayed, people who listen to this. These things are happening in public universities, not so much in private universities. It's not happening in the Ivy League. Far from it. But it really began at Arizona State University. And a brilliant guy named Paul Carriz started a center for, I can never get the right name of it, but it's a center for economic and civic thought that has been a roaring success. It's partly funded by the state of Arizona. And it's been devoted to civic education. It's really setting itself up to be a separate department within a university that is, by the way, Arizona State is a very woke place. So it's not an easy place to have done what Paul did. So and this has given rise to all sorts of similar experiments in Florida, in Tennessee, in North Carolina most recently, Chapel Hill, and many, many other. I think it's apparently Ohio is going to have 5 of these centers scattered around the state. I think the one in Miami of Ohio University is already getting started. Toledo, the University of Toledo. So there's a recognition, and for reasons not worth going into at length, but it's very difficult to change the direction of a university from within the existing structure.
Mm-hmm.
I think one particular word may say it all, tenure. That is, we professors are protected in ways that, whether we deserve it or not, and it's very difficult to fire us once we're entrenched. So you have faculties that have been, how shall I put it, they've been imbued with this sort of notion that, undermining, challenging, critical thinking is the key to a superior education. Well, critical thinking is an important thing. You know, let's be critical of everything, not just certain selective things. Let's be critical of socialism, too. Let's be critical of feminism, all these shibboleths of modern times. Let's be more widely critical. But also, let's include appreciation as part of education.
When we have these conversations about restoring civics, are we at times too focused on the presence of a mandate or of a requirement and not enough on the actual content involved? And I guess we spin this forward. Is that perhaps one reason why you wrote Land of Hope, not necessarily for higher education, but for those grade school, young adults, high school students, because the content is what really is important?
Yeah, I think, look, mandates always make people nervous. They even make me nervous. Because I do value a cherished academic freedom. And I think it's something in the academy, in higher education, is especially important. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit. Academic freedom and free speech, these are different things, but they're related. They're cognate. They're cousins, at least. So blanket mandate, you will teach this. People get upset about that. The civic institutes that are being established are not being established as mandates, mm-hmm. as factories for the promulgation of mandates. They're an alternative. They're an alternative to what students are going to get in the political science department or the history department or the any other relevant departments in the humanities or social sciences on their campuses. So they're the exact opposite of a mandate in the present situation. Yeah, I could imagine years and years down the road, it may have to be at least 50 years down the road, that the hypercritical approach to things will have died off and there'll be nothing left but the good stuff. But, I won't be around for that. That's for better or worse. I'd probably be in with the lefties then. Because I do think we always have to be open. To me, one of the fundamental tenets behind the idea of free speech and academic freedom is the recognition always we may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other guy needs to have a hearing.
Dr. Bill McClay, author of the report at AEI.org, Restoring Civics in Higher Education. He is the Victor Davis Hanson Chair in Classical History and Western Civilization here at Hillsdale College. Dr. McClay, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure, Scott, always.
Up next, we talk with author, historian, and nephew of Oscar Hammerstein, John Steele Gordon, about the American musical. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click Apply Now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson. And find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
The Ramsey Show.
When you're walking around with a little picket in your hand and you're saying, I demand $22 to work at McDonald's, then you don't get to bitch about inflation.
Yeah.
Because you caused it.
It's the Ramsey Show, where we talk about your life and your money. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
At hillsdale.edu.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You'll find older episodes of this program, plus all sorts of great Hillsdale College audio, including The Larry Arn Show, Imprimis, and the Hillsdale College online courses at podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by John Steele Gordon. He is an author, historian, and also, for the purposes of our talk today, the nephew of Oscar Hammerstein, of the famous Rodgers and Hammerstein pairing. He's here on campus to talk about The American Musical, part of our CCA lecture series on The American Musical. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
And I want to begin by setting the stage, no pun intended, for what we'll talk about today. If you can tell us a bit, remind our audience about the shows and some of the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein, and describe their working relationship.
Well, they wrote together, they wrote 9 Broadway musicals, one television musical, and one movie musical. State Fair was called, the word It Might As Well Be Spring came from. And he won the Pulitzer Prize for that song. And I believe that Oscar Hammerstein is the only person named Oscar ever to actually win a Oscar. And their first show, Oklahoma, was, you know, famously successful. It ran three times as long as any earlier book musical in Broadway history. Even today, 80 years after it opened, it has hundreds of productions around the world. It's been translated into dozens of languages. And these productions range all the way from Broadway and the West End to high school productions. Their next show was Carousel, which was a much darker play than Oklahoma. Stephen Sondheim famously said that Oklahoma is about a picnic. Carousel is about life and death. And then they did a show called Allegro, which was not a success. It never quite worked, which irritated Oscar. The last thing he was working on before he died was Allegro. But it was perhaps the most influential flop in American history because it was the first concept musical, a musical that lacks a plot. And that was a form of musical that Stephen Sondheim would bring to fruition in Company and Follies and what have you. And then their next was South Pacific, which was probably the biggest hit in Broadway history. It didn't run quite as long as Oklahoma because it was a much more expensive show.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once it failed to sell out every night, it closed fairly rapidly in 1,900 performances, something like that. And then was The King and I, and which was, you know, musicals had usually been basically boy meets girl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, The King and I was an Oriental potentate meets an English schoolmarm. You know, it was a remarkable relationship, trying to these two very strong-willed people from very different cultures trying to understand each other. And, you know, there was never a romance remotely between them, but there was, you know, you could tell that there was a sexual attraction there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wrote a play called Me and Juliet, which was, again, a flop. And it was a backstage musical. Rogers was very keen to do it. Hammerstein was less enthusiastic. And it never worked again as so often. And then the next one was called Pipe Dream. It was based on John Steinbeck's novel. And it wasn't right for Rogers and Hammerstein. They discovered too late that, you know, a large part of the of Pipe Dream takes place in a house of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just a little bit squeamish about it. And, you know, John Steinbeck, you know, complained that you've turned my whorehouse into a girls' finishing school. then they wrote Cinderella, which was the television musical based on the old story. And it ran on March 31st, 1957, the 14th anniversary of Oklahoma opening. And the television audience was 100 million. Now, the recent Super Bowl, they were, triumphing that there was the largest television audience in history at 123 million.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1957, 100 million was 60% of the American population.
Right.
And 123 million today is 36%. And then they wrote Flower Drum Song about a Chinese family trying to accommodate into American culture and what have you. And then their last production was The Sound of Music, which was an enormous hit. And the movie version of The Sound of Music, if you take inflation into account, is the highest grossing Hollywood movie musical in history.
Mm-hmm.
And their songs live on, and they probably always will. Forbes magazine estimates that the value of the R&H song catalog is around $350 million.
For those of us who weren't around, that's a good portion of us, what was the cultural impact of musicals in the 1940s and 1950s? What did they mean to America?
Well, they are much more central to American culture than they are today. I mean, hit songs came out of Broadway musicals. And then rock and roll came in, and then the Beatles, and so the popular music moved on from Broadway. And it was just, you know, everybody knew these shows. If they hadn't seen the actual play, they had seen the movies that were made from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just everybody, you know, it was just central to everybody's conception of, you know, American culture.
John Steele Gordon is with us. He's an author, historian, nephew of Oscar Hammerstein, and we're talking about Rodgers and Hammerstein and the golden age of the American musical. Oklahoma, a huge success, and you've written multiple times about the importance of it. What made Oklahoma in 1943 so different? How did it change both musicals and other forms of theater as well?
Well, Oklahoma finally brought it all together. I mean, the Broadway musical has disparate roots. The extravaganza was in the 19th century, which were mainly they were just showing off their abilities to do things on stage. Elaborate costumes and set designs and just technique. The operetta, European operetta, was the plots were more serious, but they were often very fanciful, taking place in mythical European countries and featuring romances between a milkmaid and a prince and that sort of thing. And then there was vaudeville with its comic routines and its elaborate dance routines. And these all came together starting in the 1920s, and then especially with Showboat in 1927, which was just astonishingly different than mm-hmm. anything written before. And it was, again, a huge hit. And then in Oklahoma, Rodgers and Hammerstein really did put it all together, just integrated everything into one seamless piece. And that became the template for musicals written ever since. And you know, no musical written after Oklahoma was unaffected by it, mm-hmm. from frothy comedies like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes to tragedies like West Side Story. They all bore the imprint of Oklahoma.
You've said that Hammerstein thought that he'd write a few musicals, go back, and then become a more serious playwright. But as he experimented with musicals, he found himself to be satisfied creatively within that silo as well. What sort of chances did he take? What kind of changes did he make that satisfied him inside the realm of the musical?
Well, he began to to make the characters more realistic rather than just stock characters, which means it had to be better written. The thing you have to understand about Oscar Hammerstein is that most people think of him as one of the great Broadway lyricists, which he was, but he was also the only great Broadway lyricist who was a playwright first and last. And so he was experimenting with writing the play, with writing the book, as it's called. And, you know, the book writer is the Rodney Dangerfield of Broadway. I mean, mm-hmm. if the show's a hit, nobody thinks about the book, and if the show's a flop, it's always the book's fault. And so he just put much more effort into the book and writing real characters and real scenes and that people could relate to. That, you know, reminds me of people I know.
Mm-hmm. More to come in just a moment with John Steele Gordon. He is the nephew of Oscar Hammerstein, as we continue to talk about Rodgers and Hammerstein and the American musical. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now at the Turtle Bay Museum, Mindbender Mansion, Unlock the Puzzle. On exhibition now through January 5th, featuring interactive games, challenges, brain teasers, and more. Perfect for families of all ages and school groups. Test your brain power and problem-solving skills now at Turtle Bay Museum. Don't miss out on this immersive exhibition. Mindbender Mansion, Unlock the Puzzle. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit SimpsonU.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com, has teamed up with the Flag Center and are giving you a chance to win an American flag. And there are two ways to qualify to win a beautiful, high-quality American flag by Annan. We will be giving them away every Friday morning at 8:15. Now, the first way to qualify is listen weekdays between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott during Free Fire Radio. And they're going to let you know when to call in to qualify at 530-605-4566. And the second way to qualify, check out our Facebook page. Look for the American flag and type your name in the comments. Then, every Friday morning at 8:15, we will draw a winner of a beautiful American flag from the Flag Center at 2124 Hilltop Drive and your friends here at KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at KCNR1460.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with John Steele Gordon, usually about something to do with economics or history. And this time, yes, history, but specifically about Rodgers and Hammerstein and the American musical. He is the nephew of Oscar Hammerstein. John, what did that writing process entail? What did you know about how he wrote both the songs and then both wrote the dialogue, the plot, the book? How did he go about doing that?
Well, he would write towards the end of his life. I'm not sure when the dictaphone was invented, but sometime in the 1930s, I think. And today it's an antediluvian technology that involved plastic belts that for some reason were painted or colored pink. I don't know why. And he would write the dialogue. He would just speak it into a dictaphone. And then it would be typed, and he would change it and what have you. He always wrote the lyrics by hand using yellow legal pads. Most of them are down at the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take him quite a while to write a lyric. He spent a whole week writing "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning," which is 150 words in it, something like that. And he and Rodgers would always have this ongoing joke that. And it was more or less of a joke. Hammerstein would say, I spent a week writing the lyrics, and then Rodgers writes the music in 10 minutes. but, of course, Rodgers had been thinking about the music. And, Rodgers never sat down and wrote a tune. He always had some reason for writing a tune. Noel Coward, who was pretty good at writing songs himself, once said that Dick Rodgers, that the man just pees melody.
You wrote that Rodgers and Hammerstein were devoted not to making masterpieces, but to making hits. How did that mindset manifest itself in their work?
Well, once a play was in rehearsal and then opened out of town, the traditional places were New Haven and then Boston, although it varied. Me and Juliet opened in Cleveland, for instance. And they had in front of a live audience. And how the live audience reacted to the play, whether they began to look bored because something was going on too long, or they just didn't like it. I mean, for instance, the end of Carousel originally featured Mr. and Mrs. God in a sort of Victorian living room, and it just did not work at all. People the whole audience, you could just feel them going, no. And so it was changed to the Starkeeper, and Mrs. God was, put out the pasture. And he hands Billy Bigelow a star to give it to his daughter. And that worked. And so that's what they would do. If they, however much they liked the song, if the audience didn't, out it went.
Mm-hmm.
Now, occasionally it would get recycled. There was a song in South Pacific called Suddenly Lucky. which was discarded, and then Hammerstein turned it into Getting to Know You in The King and I.
Talking with John Steele Gordon, author, historian, nephew of Oscar Hammerstein, and he is here on campus as part of our CCA lecture series on the American musical, talking about Rodgers and Hammerstein and the golden age of the American musical. Do you have a specific framework in mind when you say golden age? Is there a particular beginning? Perhaps it's Oklahoma. Is there a particular end to the golden age?
Well, I think Oklahoma is the beginning. I mean, there were certainly wonderful shows written earlier, but I think the golden age really begins with Oklahoma, and it lasted for roughly 20 years. And then, as I say, music moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, all art forms come to an end. I mean, the last grand opera that is still in general repertory is Turandot, which opened in 1927. You know, in 1950, any educated man, whether he liked poetry or not, could have rattled off the names of five or six living poets. I mean, I can't name a single one today, because poets began talking to each other instead of, talking to a popular audience. And so popular audience said, okay, bye. And so, you know, Leonard Bernstein, well, he did write one show after 1964, but it wasn't very good. And, you know, actually Stephen Sondheim was starting. His first show was West Side Story, 1957. And then his first show, which he wrote the music, was Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Sondheim is a genius in many ways. And he continued writing shows up until the 1990s. He died a couple of years ago at the age of 91. But he was at the exception. Kander and Ebb, where other wrote Chicago and Cabaret. And they were also, a united songwriting team, which is very unusual in Broadway. Broadway musicals are extremely promiscuous. And so it just sort of faded away. There were hits. I mean, Hello, Dolly. Maybe you could say Hello, Dolly was the last great hit of a golden age. I think it opened in 1964.
How do you think the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals aged? And has there been a reevaluation of them perhaps in the past 20 years or so?
There has been. They were such enormous hits when they opened, most of at least the great ones were, that they tended to get frozen. The same thing happened to Gilbert and Sullivan, when it was controlled by Doyle Cart. I mean, it was, the Mikado in 1950 was done exactly the same way as it had been done in 1883 or whenever it opened. And it was only when the copyrights ran out that people were able to do Gilbert and Sullivan without, kissing the ring of Doyle Cart. And so they could begin to experiment and stuff. And, Rodgers and Hammerstein began to be seen, especially because a lot of people base their understanding of R&H on the movies rather than the plays, which are much more widely seen. And a lot of the movies were essentially Baudelaireized, because nobody remember the Hayes office was still operating, and you couldn't say swear words, and you couldn't have bad guys getting away with it, and stuff like that. And it was only in the 90s when they began to look at these plays again and to reimagine them, especially in London with the London production of Carousel in 1992, which came to New York the following year, and it was it was a huge hit. And but also they said, boy, this is different from what we thought Rodgers and Hammerstein really was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's Rodgers and Hammerstein shows tend to be expensive to put on, because after Oklahoma, they didn't have any trouble raising money.
Sure.
There was people with throwing money through the windows at them. And so the King and I, the costumes are extremely expensive. Whereas in Oklahoma, you can basically, do the costumes out of Old Navy store. But they're still done around the world. I mean, Oklahoma has several hundred productions a year. Oklahoma is very easy to produce. South Pacific is very difficult, so it's not done as often. Remember, in South Pacific, the male lead has to be middle-aged and sexy and able to sing Some Enchanted Evening, which is a rather rare combination.
Yes.
I saw it once at Lincoln Center with Giorgio Tazzi, who was a basso, but he was past middle age, and nobody could possibly have called him sexy.
John Steele Gordon is with us. He's on campus as part of our CCA lecture series on the American musical. You were present on the first night of this CCA, and it was a bit of a discussion, debate about, I think, the current state of the American musical. When you look and see some successes, Hamilton and Wicked certainly among them, it feels like there's still a desire on behalf of many to go see a show, to go to Broadway. Does the quality of today's shows merit that kind of attention? Are they, do people want to go to a show because it's a thing to do, or because the quality of the shows demand it?
Well, I think the standards of Broadway are still extremely high. What I don't think they do as well today is, I love lyrics. Mm-hmm. I love poetry. And the lyrics are not nearly as tight and as, well written as they used to be. Now, very often, near rhymes will do.
Sure.
As opposed to true rhymes.
John Steele Gordon, author, historian, and nephew of Oscar Hammerstein, and here on campus at Hillsdale for the American Musical CCA Lecture Series. John, thanks so much for joining us today on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Bill McClay from Hillsdale's History Department and John Steele Gordon. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Looking for the freshest top-shelf flower? Look no further than the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake, where they work directly with small, local farmers to bring you the finest flower that fits your price. But that's not all. The Queen of Dragons has the best prices on carts, edibles, concentrates, and pre-rolls. Plus, don't miss happy hour every day from 6 p.m. until close and all day Sundays. Don't just stock up on toilet paper. Queen of Dragons has great deals, so you can stock up on the best flower for the best price. prices. So what are you waiting for? Stop by Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-238-5638 for details or delivery. That's 530-238-5638. And don't forget to follow Queen of Dragons on Facebook and X at the Queen Dragons for all the latest deals and updates. Support Queen of Dragons, a local business in the city of Shasta Lake, where you will find the most friendly and knowledgeable staff. Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. And it's election season, so don't...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.